Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Twang's the Thang, the $1 million worth of Twang, volumes 1 and 2, Twistin' and Twangin', Twangy Guitar, Silky Strings, Twang a Country Song, Twangin' Up a Storm, Twangin' the Golden Hits, Twangsville, the biggest twang of them all, and who could forget the classic The Roarin' Twangies. Greetings, everybody. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this podcast. It's called Rockin' the Suburbs. We try to put one out every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we do our darndest to keep that up. And I thank you very much for listening, subscribing, downloading, doing all the things you do to hear my voice if you are hearing it. If you're listening to this podcast on the day it's released, that would be May 1st. 2025. Happy May to all. It's not too early to start thinking about April new music. The month is officially closed. I'll be doing that in a couple weeks, so just want to put that out there. Today on the podcast, we are going to step into a place we haven't been for a little while, but we frequently go back there, and that is Patrick's Book Nook. To the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle? Thanks, as always, to the lovely and talented Mike Wagner for his driving force on the instrumental there that became the Book Nook. If you listen closely in other places, you might hear something similar. Give you a hint, total strangers. That's where the hint is. The book today, I was cleaning up in the basement. I'll tell you the backstory really quick. I was cleaning up the basement over the past couple weeks, organizing, doing a little spring cleaning. Came across a cache of books that I were stacked behind a shelf, pulled them all out and put them up with the other books. And amongst them was a little volume entitled The Golden Age of Rock Instrumentals. It's written by Steve Otfanowski, a loving tribute to the pioneers of the instrumental era, from Dick Dale to Sandy Nelson to Booker T and the MGs and the Ventures. This book was published in 1997. I'm not sure how I got it. I don't know where it came from. I don't know if I bought it. There is a press release inside the book. I don't know if somebody sent it to me. I'm not sure if Craig Rosen gave it to me. It is on the Billboard Books imprint, and I know he's printed some stuff. But I'm not sure. It's a tidy little volume. It's only about 180 pages, plus a little discography and bibliography type section in the back, and it's fun to read. It's a breeze. I got through it in about 3 or 4 days, and there's lots of picks all throughout the book, which is great, and it's just really fun, and focuses on a little bit of a lesser-known genre in music. Starts off the early days with people like Martin Denny and Les Paul and Mary Ford, and the period of those honking sax instrumentals like Yakety Sax and some of those other things, and goes into the first wave of instrumental music where hits were produced from artists like The Ventures, Duane Eddy, The Shantays, The Safaris, and rolls into that whole related surf music genre that I think a lot of people, associate instrumental music with. Dick Dale, of course, we've already mentioned, The Crossfires, and there's also some you know, a section on the hot rod genre that was a thing too. There are a great number of little anecdotes in this book, and that's the thing I like a lot about it. There are little details, little stories that'll be thrown in here, you know, just in little sections separated by a separator, which is a good thing to separate things with. There's a good one here. I'll give you an example of one of the ones I liked was Duane Eddy and his producer manager Lee Hazelwood were worked very closely together, and you may know Duane Eddy from some of his bigger hits. Ramrod was a big one. Rebel Rouser, I think, was his big one. Cannonball, another one. And right around 1959, one of the first rock LPs in stereo, Duane Eddy released. It was called "Have Twangy Guitar Will Travel." But the twang in the album's title became Eddie's trademark. I'm going to read from the book now. And quote, he and Hazelwood managed to squeeze it into no less than 11 subsequent albums. The Twang's The Thang, The Million Dollars Worth of Twang, Volumes 1 and 2, Twistin' and Twangin', Twangy Guitar Silky Strings, Twang a Country Song, Twangin' Up a Storm, Twangin' the Golden Hits, Twangsville, The Biggest Twang of Them All, and who could forget the classic The Roarin' Twangies. Something from Duane Eddy there. Let's see. What else is a highlight of this book? There's a really excellent section on European groups that I really didn't know much about, including the Tornadoes and a really interesting character named Joe Meek, whose name I probably heard, but I didn't know a whole lot. He pioneered things like using the recording studio as an instrument, experimental space age, quote-unquote, music, and developments in recording, like overdubbing, sampling, he was doing it way back when, and reverberation, a lot of use of reverb. All, you know, the kind of stuff you had to put together by using tape and actually recording and splicing and doing all these kinds of things. It wasn't, you know, Pro Tools time, of course. One of my favorite parts is the section on Memphis instrumental music. And though I knew a lot of the players and a lot of the songs, like Booker T and the MGs, King Curtis, the Marques, etc., it was really cool to learn a little bit more about Bill Black, who played bass for Elvis Presley in the Sun Records days. And he had a combo after Elvis left Sun, and he wasn't working with him too much anymore. And Bill Black and his combo, and they made really cool records, including this really cool one that I was able to find. It's out there on the streamings where they do all Chuck Berry songs.
Thank you.
There's a section on country instrumentals, which is really cool. There's all the Herbert Albert type stuff that went on. And also, you know, a pretty cool section on, you know, more well-known bands who did instrumentals, sometimes as B-sides or sometimes just on their albums. Fats Domino, Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, Les Paul, Bill Haley in the Comets were a big believer in that. They talk in this book about how when they were in Hamburg in the early days, the Beatles would play a lot of Duane Eddy songs in their set, instrumentals. And that's really interesting, too. I never really, you don't really think of it that way, but I know one of my favorite bands, The Chills, did a bunch of instrumentals. The Clean did as well. They're not included here. There's no section on Flying Nun, unfortunately, but maybe in the next volume or in the revised, updated edition. but really, I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's these little asides and little anecdotes that make the book really, really fun to read, and I enjoyed it very much. There's a little section on the band called the Pyramids that I had never heard of, but I want to read it to you now because I think it's really funny. One of the last big surf bands to emerge, the Pyramids, were undoubtedly one of the best marketed. When the Long Beach, California group's first single, The Pyramids Stomp, fizzled nationally, bassist Steve Leonard carefully analyzed the Shantae's pipeline and came up with a very clever variation on its famous opening reverb riff. Penetration, originally titled Eyeballs, went all the way to number 18, helped by the promotional savvy of the group's manager, John Hodge. The British invasion had begun about 2 weeks earlier, and Hodge convinced the Pyramids to shave their heads and become America's answer to the Beatles. During their concerts, the group would wear Beatle wigs and hurl them off halfway through the show to reveal their bald heads, while a bevy of girls hired by Hodge stormed the stage screaming. Other Hodge gimmicks include having the group arrive at a gig atop an elephant and once in a helicopter. The gimmicks worked, and the Pyramids quickly found themselves appearing on American Bandstand and Hullabaloo and in the third Frankie Internet Beach movie, Bikini Beach. Unfortunately, Hodge was not as good at investing their money as he was at helping them earn it. Several bad investments blew their nest egg, and the group's members soon grew back their hair and disbanded. I love that stuff. I really do. Yeah, it's really fun. And there's lots of pictures, as I said, spread out all through the book, which I happen to appreciate a lot more than just having one of those center sections with photos where you have to, you're reading part of it, and then you have to go look at the photo, and then you have to go back and find where you were. I like it when the picture's right there about the thing you're reading, which is cool. Lots of pictures of album covers and stuff. But that's just, you know, personal preference. And there's a cool discography about each chapter, which talks about records you should listen to related to each one. And then I think the cherry on top is the appendix, 70 of the best rock and pop instrumentals. I'm going to be using these myself for some personal things having to do with broadcasting. So there's a great list here from Peter Gunn, Stranger on the Shore by Acker Bilk. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that. That's a weird song, but I like it. A bunch from the Booker T and the MJs, James Brown's Night Train, Dave Brubeck, Take Five, Bumblebee and the Stingers. Anybody remember them? It was a studio group. Song was Nut Rocker. The Champs, of course, with Tequila. Now, also raised the question, is tequila really an instrumental? Because there's that one part where they say,
tequila.
Miser Lou by Dick Dale, of course, and the Deltones. This is not an order, by the way. It's not ranked 1 to 70. It's just 70 of them. A Theme from a Summer Place. Cast Your Fate to the Wind by Vince Guaraldi. Anybody knows that one? Let There Be Drums by Sandy Nelson. The Stripper by David Rose, of course, a pretty famous instrumental tune. Telstar by the Tornadoes. And, of course, Link Wray and the Raymond doing Rumble is on here, too. So, anyway, great book. The Golden Age of Rock Instrumentals by Steve Otfinoski. And pick it up if it's still in print. I don't know, but you can probably find it. Or, hell, if you want to borrow my copy, just let me know. Just get in touch. I'll let you borrow it for as long as you want. It's really a fun read. So, check it out. That's it. A little visit to the book nook for a book that just happened to literally show up without me knowing I ever owned it. So I'm glad I do, and I'm glad I read it. and happy to share it with you. And not sure how it got here, but however, I'm happy. So that's it for today. Tomorrow we're going to have an episode discussing the life of Mike Peters, the lead singer of The Alarm, who recently passed away. So look forward to that. A little appreciation with several different members of our listening audience appearing as well. How about we go out with that BB Bumble and the Stingers and hear Nut Rocker. Why not? We'll do that. And with that, I am Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jen Linehan, we will talk to you guys tomorrow. Here says, a loving tribute to the pioneers of the instrumental area. I'll meet you in the instrumental area.